Legend of Yufei Chapter 13.
Yufei and his four companions, you've got Wang Yi, Niu Gao, Tang Huai in there.
Right.
They knew instantly they couldn't stick around. They fled the grounds, like, right away. They knew they were in serious trouble.
And their actual departure, it sounds incredibly emotional.
It really was. They rode hard to the Imperial Guard's gate, got off their horses, and, well, the text says they wept.
Wow.
Yeah, and they bowed four times, which is a really significant gesture. Deep respect, urgent gratitude.
Okay.
And they asked the officer there, please, tell Great Lord Zongzi.
And what was the message? It sounds intense.
It was, basically. Tell the Great Lord we can't repay his kindness in this life, but we'll serve him as dogs and horses in the next.
Serve him as dogs and horses in the next life. That's some serious loyalty, especially when they're running for their lives. What does that tell us?
It tells you everything about their bond, doesn't it? The depth of that loyalty, the impact Zongzi had on them. Pledging service like that, it's an ancient vow. Total devotion, self-sacrifice, even beyond death.
Mm.
A really desperate, profound sense of obligation.
Incredible. So after that, they just vanished.
Pretty much. Back to their lodging, settled their bills super quick, grabbed their stuff, and rode out of the city. Just trying to get home, put distance between them and, well, everything.
But you know how these things go. There's always someone waiting to take advantage.
Always. Zhang Bangcheng, a notoriously treacherous official.
Ah, yes.
He was right there at the Meridian Gate, saw the emperor, and immediately reported what happened. But he framed it very specifically.
How so?
He said, the whole disruption, the chaos at the exam, it was because Zongzi's student, Yufei, picked out and killed Prince Liang.
Oh, clever. So he pins it directly on Zongzi.
Exactly. Makes it Zongzi's responsibility. Very convenient for Zhang Bangcheng.
And Zongzi, he was a big deal, right?
Huge deal. He'd served and been trusted across two imperial reigns. Immense influence, immense respect.
But it didn't matter.
Well, the court reacted fast. They couldn't just, you know, condemn him outright immediately, but bam, stripped of his post.
Just like that. Wow. So is this just pure political backstabbing, or does it show something deeper about the court itself, like a weakness?
I think it's probably a bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah.
It definitely shows how fragile even a solid reputation could be when things get chaotic and there's an opening.
Right.
But yeah, it also suggests the court maybe needed a quick scapegoat, optics over justice perhaps, to calm things down quickly.
So Zongzi becomes collateral damage, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. An established, respected figure suddenly sidelined.
Career seemingly in tatters. But that's not where his story ends in this chapter, is it?
No, not at all. Because then a gate official shows up, brings him the news about Yufei and the others.
The message.
Yeah, tells him about the tearful farewell at the gate and relays that message of, you know, eternal gratitude, dogs and horses in the next life.
And Zongzi's reaction here is, it's something else. He doesn't rage about his own situation.
Not one bit. He just sighs. And the text says he repeated, what a pity, what a pity.
A pity. Not for himself, though.
No. That's the incredible thing. His sorrow, his regret, it's for the loss of talent. He's thinking about Yufei and the others, what they could offer the country.
So he's lost his job, but he's lamenting the potential loss of their talent for the nation.
Exactly. It just reveals this profound strategic thinking, this deep, selfless commitment to the state way beyond his own personal circumstances. He's thinking about China's future, not his own comfort.
That's genuinely remarkable. Okay, so he's just been stripped of his post. What does he do? Surely he just has to accept it.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But no. His reaction is, it's pretty stunning. He doesn't waste time feeling sorry for himself. He immediately calls for his scroll box, his important documents and his silver.
Okay. Why?
He tells retainers, get ready. We're going after them.
He chases them after they technically caused his downfall?
Yep. It's an extraordinary move, isn't it? Purely selfless leadership.
But how? Why? His household must have thought he was crazy.
They did question it. They're like, master, they're long gone and you're stuck here. But his explanation, this is where you see his incredible foresight.
Go on.
He explicitly compares what he's doing to Xiao He chasing Han Jin under the moon.
Whoa, okay, that's a major historical reference. Xiao He pursuing Han Jin is like the ultimate example of recognizing and securing vital talent, right? It secured a dynasty.
Precisely. It's the story about valuing talent above all else. And Zongzi says, and this gives me chills, Yufei's talent is not weaker than Han Jin's.
Wow.
And then he adds, the nation is in need of talent. How can such a pillar be lost?
A pillar. So it's not about him, not about politics, not about revenge or blame. It's purely about the country needing this person.
100%. He sees Yufei as a critical strategic asset. Someone the nation literally cannot afford to lose, no matter the personal cost to Zongzi himself. It's just incredible leadership, national interest way above self.
He really understood that some people are just too important to let slip away.
Absolutely.
Okay, so while Zongzi is making this momentous decision, what's happening with Yufei and his friends, they're still riding hard.
Galloping away, yeah, still feeling the pressure. New Gao, you know, being New Gao.
Huh, always him.
He starts questioning the rush. Like, why are we still fleeing so fast?
And Yufei.
Yufei lays it out. How could that treacherous minister, meaning Zong Bangcheng, let me off lightly, he's worried. Worried about pursuit, traps, you know, other incidents, if they slow down.
So Yufei's not just a fighter. He gets the politics. He knows the danger is real and personal.
Definitely. He's got a sharp awareness of the political game even then. Knows they need distance.
And then, predictably perhaps, they hear trouble. Horses shouting.
Yep, behind them. And Yufei's first thought, it's Prince Liang's household guards. They're coming for revenge.
Makes sense. And how do the others react to this apparent pursuit? I bet it was varied.
Oh, classic. Wim Gi, the practical one, is just like, right, let's turn and fight, cut them off root and branch, just deal with the threat head on.
Okay, direct approach.
Then you get New Gao.
Oh, boy. Here we go. What did New Gao suggest?
He shouts, don't panic. I've got a plan.
Uh-oh.
Let's all turn back, kill the treacherous minister, Zhang Bangcheng, seize Bianjing City.
Wait, seize the capital.
And then, elder brother, you will become emperor, and we four will become great generals.
He actually said that. Kill the minister, take the capital, make Yufei emperor. That's ambitious, even for New Gao.
It's pure New Gao. Just completely unfiltered, wild impulsiveness.
I mean, it's kind of hilarious, but it also shows you the sheer chaos and maybe desperation of the moment, or just New Gao's unique worldview.
It's definitely a bit of comic relief in a tense situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yet it highlights the different personalities. New Gao's just boundless ambition mixed with zero sense of consequence. Such a contrast to Yufei.
How did Yufei react to that little plan?
Furious. Absolutely furious. Yells, nonsense. Are you mad? Shut your mouth.
Uh-huh. And did New Gao shut his mouth?
He apparently pouted and muttered something like, fine, I won't say anything. When their soldiers catch us, I won't even fight. I'll just stick my neck out and let them chop it off.
Oh, New Gao. Always dramatic.
Always. Thankfully, Tang Kuai, the voice of reason, steps in.
What does he suggest?
Something much more sensible. Look, let's just rein in our horses and wait. See who it is. If they come peacefully, we talk. If they come looking for a fight, we fight. Are we scared of them?
Okay, that sounds more like a plan. Mm-hmm. Calm down. Assess the situation.
Exactly. A much more measured approach. It shows the different ways people handle extreme stress.
But it turns out it's not Prince Ling's men, is it?
No. Suddenly, this single rider rushes up shouting, Master Yu, slow down, slow down. Old Master Zong is here.
Zongzi, what a twist. Imagine the relief and the confusion.
Totally. Yufei and his brothers, they immediately jump off their horses, kneel right there on the road in front of Zongzi, humbled, probably bewildered.
And Zongzi explains everything.
Yeah, he tells them straight. Look, my dismissal. It's because of what happened. Zong Bangcheng impeached me.
Oof. That must have hit them hard, the guilt.
Oh, absolutely. The text says they were deeply apologetic, really uneasy. They knew they'd caused this respected mentor huge trouble.
But Zongzi, true to form.
True to form. Magnanimous. He basically brushes off their apologies. Said, don't worry about it. Honestly, I just fear the court won't actually let me retire. If I can retire now, maybe I'll actually get some peace and quiet.
He's incredible. He genuinely doesn't seem to blame them or resent his own situation. It's all perspective.
His focus is just elsewhere. On them, on the future, maybe even on a bit of well-earned rest, ironically. His character really shines through there.
Amazing. So they're all reunited on the road. What happens next? They can't just stand there.
Right. Practicalities kick in. Zongzi asks his retainers, okay, is there anywhere nearby we can actually stay the night?
Sensible question after all that drama.
And they find out that just ahead, about half a li.
So like a short distance, a few hundred meters?
Yeah, roughly a quarter kilometer, maybe a bit more. There's a garden estate belonging to a counselor, Li Daiye, and it's suitable for lodging.
A safe place to rest and figure things out.
Exactly. So the whole group, Zongzi, Yufei, the companions, the retainers, they head towards Counselor Li's garden.
A beautiful setting. But Zongzi isn't just, you know, offering a nice view. He immediately arranges for this big feast from Zafeng Town nearby.
Which seems like a simple thing, right? Providing food. But like you said, it becomes this really crucial piece later on.
It does. But even before the food, what's striking is Zhangzi's practical generosity. Straight away, he gifts Yufei a suit of armor and robes.
Which he really needed.
Exactly. It's immediate, tangible support. It's not just words. But for me, the advice he gives is just as powerful, maybe more so.
What does he tell him?
Well, first, don't lose heart just because of this temporary setback. Standard advice, maybe, but important. Then he promises to recommend them to the court later, you know, if certain corrupt officials get exposed. So he's dangling this future opportunity.
Ah, okay. So immediate help, future hope. That's smart leadership.
Totally. But then he shifts gears a bit. He talks about something really fundamental, filial piety. Basically, go home, see your parents, honor your elders. Grounding them.
Right, connecting back to their roots.
Mm-hmm. And then, crucially for their careers, he hammers home the need to keep practicing. Martial arts, scholarship, all of it. He specifically warns them not to just, you know, give up on training because they're discouraged.
Why is that?
Because, he says, it would ruin one's lifelong aspirations. Basically, all that effort would be wasted. Don't let disappointment derail your whole future.
Wow, that's comprehensive advice. Practical stuff, future stuff, personal values. And a kick in the pants to keep going.
Exactly. It's a really multifaceted way to handle failure. And the brothers, you know, they really take it to heart. They wholeheartedly agree, showing huge respect for his wisdom.
Okay, so they've got this powerful guidance kind of ringing in their ears. And then the scene moves to the feast Zhangzi ordered.
Right. 6 tables set up. People are discussing big topics, current events, military tactics, lofty stuff.
But our focus, and where these tiny, crucial details start creeping in, is down at the lower table.
Mm-hmm. Where Wang Yi and Yu Gao are sitting. Remember, they'd been guarding the training ground all day.
So they must have been starving.
Absolutely ravenous. The text uses great imagery, like hungry dragons seeing water, tigers and wolves. They just inhaled everything, wiped the plates clean.
Okay, typical hungry soldiers.
Yeah.
But then comes the catch.
Yeah, here's the little culinary mistake that triggers everything. The chef, apparently rushed, accidentally put way too much salt in the dishes.
Oh no, we've all been there. Way too much salt.
Exactly. And what happens when you eat super salty food?
You get incredibly thirsty.
Precisely. So Wang Yi and Yu Gao are constantly demanding tea. Just more tea, more tea.
Yeah.
And there's this funny little observation from the tea server. He kind of mutters that these two are rough and unrefined, not like the other refined guests. He suggests maybe big bowls of cold tea would be better for them than these dainty little cups of hot tea.
Makes sense if they're that thirsty.
Yeah, and Wang Yi is thrilled. He apparently gulps down 5 or 6 bowls of this cold tea, finds it really refreshing.
5 or 6 bowls after super salty food. Oh boy.
Yeah. It seems totally minor, right? Salty food, cold tea, lots of it. But that combination is the exact pivot point for the drama that's about to unfold.
It's fascinating, isn't it, how such a small, like, kitchen error can just snowball.
It really is. So they finish the feast, enjoy the night, they leave at dawn. Zhangzi, still being generous, gives Yufei a horse just to carry that armor chest.
Nice touch.
Yeah. So the 5 brothers are riding along, talking about Zhangzi, how incredibly kind he was, how they could possibly repay him, you know, that kind of conversation.
And then it happens.
It's just like that. Bang. Mid-conversation, Wang Yi suddenly cries out. He just falls right off his horse.
Oh, wow. What's wrong with him?
His face turns ashen, the text says. His jaw is clenched shut. It looks really serious.
That sounds terrifying. How does Yufei react?
He's devastated, deeply distressed, tears, the works. He's worried about Wang Yi dying with his dreams, his unfulfilled aspirations still ahead of him. And he's thinking, oh God, how can I face his parents if the worst happens? It's really raw emotion, brotherly love, intense fear.
Man, that's heavy. Everything going so well and then bam, crisis.
But amidst all that panic and crying, Niu Gao steps up. And he's surprisingly calm.
The other hungry guy, Niu Gao.
Yep, the same one. He tells the others, basically, stop crying. You're making me lose focus.
Huh. Okay, practical guy. What's his take?
His diagnosis is super direct. He just says, look, Wang Yi isn't really sick. He's just got a swollen stomach. It's from all that food, he says, especially combined with chugging down gallons of cold tea.
Ah, the salty food and the cold tea combo coming back to bite him. Literally.
Exactly. And then Niu Gao starts his treatment.
Okay, I'm bracing myself. What does he do?
He just starts massaging Wang Yi's stomach.
Just massaging his stomach.
Yep. And the results are, well, immediate. And like you said earlier, pretty visceral.
How so?
The source describes this gurgling sound like thunder coming from Wang Yi's belly.
Okay.
Followed by the expulsion of foul water and then feces, which were, and I quote, unbearably stinky.
Oh my God. Okay. Wow. That is graphic, but effective.
Apparently incredibly effective. It's crude, no doubt.
Right.
But it worked. Niu Gao basically gave him a high-powered abdominal massage that forced everything out.
So the gross details are actually key here.
Absolutely. It highlights this really practical, no-nonsense solution. It's pure instinct and observation from Niu Gao.
Yeah.
Maybe based on rough experience. Who knows?
Right. It's like this raw, intuitive knowledge.
Exactly. And Wang Yi starts to come around. He slowly regains consciousness, groaning a bit. They immediately get him some fresh clothes, thankfully.
I bet. So Niu Gao basically solved the immediate crisis with some hands-on folk medicine.
Pretty much. It shows a different kind of wisdom, right? Not learned scholarship, but immediate practical know-how.
Okay, so Wang Yi is stabilized, but probably feeling pretty rough. What next?
Yu Fei, being the leader, thinks practically. He sends another brother, Tang Huai, on ahead to that Zaofang town they passed.
To find somewhere to rest.
Exactly. Find a decent place for Wang Yi to properly recover. Tang Huai gets to this bustling town and finds an inn run by a guy called Fang Laoshi. The text specifically mentions he's known for being honest, good quality, and an innkeeper.
Definitely.
Tang Huai just explains straight up, got a sip, brother, need lodging.
And Fang Laoshi is helpful.
Very. Welcomes them, assures them the rooms are clean, and crucially, he says there's a doctor available right there in town.
Ah, so they can get a professional opinion now.
Right. So they get Wang Yi settled, and they call the doctor. He comes, examines Wang Yi.
What's the official diagnosis?
The doctor says it's spleen damage from food and also cold yi.
Cold yi. What's that?
It's a concept from traditional Chinese medicine. Basically, an excess of coldness or imbalance in the body, often affecting digestion. It fits with the cold tea, right?
Yeah, it makes sense in that context.
Yeah.
So what's the treatment?
He prescribes 2 doses of medicine, something to dispel cold and aid digestion, and he assures them Wang Yi will be fine.
Okay, sounds reasonable.
Yu Fei pays the doctor 1 quan of silver, and the group settles in. They can finally relax a bit and properly care for Wang Yi while he rests and takes the medicine.
You've got this figure emerging from Taiheng Mountain, the major threat, really, to the Song Dynasty. The Golden Blade King Wangshan.
The Golden Blade. Okay.
And he hears 2 key things. First, Liang Wang's been killed by Yu Fei. That's significant. But maybe more importantly, the highly respected general Zhang Zi, he's been removed from office.
A power vacuum.
Precisely. For someone like Wangshan, this just screams opportunity, a moment of weakness.
So he sees this opening immediately. What does that reaction, that speed, tell us about these kinds of opportunistic rebellions? Or maybe just about, you know, ambition itself?
Well, it's pretty textbook, isn't it? He gets his generals, his strategists together. He says, look, treacherous officials are running things. The military's unhappy. Now is the time.
Makes sense.
And his strategist, Tian Shi, he doubles down on this, points out the emperor's huge building projects are making people miserable, the court's full of corrupt figures.
So internal problems are basically an open door for external threats.
It's a classic vulnerability for any empire, really. Division, perceived weakness. It's like an invitation.
And Wangshan doesn't wait around. He sends out 30,000 men, but disguised.
Yeah, very clever. Disguised as imperial troops. The idea is to soften up the capital, Beijing, before his main force arrives.
And it works. They just march right up.
Pretty much unimpeded. They manage to set up camp just 50 li the city that's not far outside the city's south gate.
Wow. So what's the reaction inside the city when they get this news? Must have been chaos.
Oh, absolutely. The generals defending the city.
Yeah.
Pure panic. They slam the gate shut, rush a report to Emperor Huzong.
Well, the emperor calls an emergency session.
He does. Gets everyone together, demands to know who's going to lead the troops, who's going to push back this invasion, and silence. Just dead silence. Nobody steps up.
Seriously, complete silence with an army at the gates.
It's pretty shocking, isn't it? No one wants to volunteer.
Why? Why the silence? Is it just fear?
Well, the source says the emperor is furious. He starts pointing fingers, especially at officials like Zhang Bangchang, accusing them of basically forgetting generations of imperial favor.
So it's fear, maybe self-preservation,
yeah,
maybe something else.
Could be. Fear, certainly. Maybe some complicity. The court seems completely paralyzed.
Yep.
No one wants to face what looks like an unbeatable enemy, especially when, you know, the best generals aren't even around anymore. They've been pushed aside.
You can almost feel that tension, that desperation, but then someone speaks up.
Yes, finally, Li Gang. He's a censor.
Okay. Remind us, what's a censor's role here?
A censor was a pretty high-ranking official. Their main job was to advise the emperor, critique policy, sometimes even critique the emperor himself. They often carried significant moral weight.
Got it. So Lai Gang steps forward. What's his solution to break this deadlock?
He cuts right to it, tells the emperor, yes, Wang Shan is strong, he's ambitious, but there's one person he's always feared, Zhang Zi.
The general who was dismissed.
The very same. Lai Gang's proposal is direct. The only way to beat these rebels is to bring Zhang Zi back. Reinstate him. Let him lead the army.
And the emperor, he must be desperate at this point.
Totally desperate. He actually agrees.
Yeah.
Tells Lai Gang, okay, go get him. Go summon Zhang Zi.
Right. This is where it gets strange. With Zhang Zi's supposed illness, Lai Gang goes to his mansion.
Exactly. But he's met by Zhang Zi's son, Zhang Fang. And Zhang Fang says, sorry, my father's sick. He's in bed. Can't receive the imperial decree.
Sick? How? What's the illness?
Well, Zhang Fang explains that ever since the military trials, his father was really frightened and he developed this condition. Zheng Chong.
What is that exactly?
It's often described as severe palpitations, agitation, almost like his heart is just, you know, in turmoil. He says his father's basically confined to his study now.
Okay, so it sounds physical, but maybe more.
That's the interesting part. What does this Zheng Chong really represent? Lai Gang seems to pick up on this nuance later.
So Lai Gang insists on seeing him, I assume.
He tries. But when he gets to the study door, he hears snoring. Like thunder, the text says.
Snoring? While supposedly gravely ill.
Right. Lai Gang even jokes. You know, if it were anyone else, I'd say he was faking it. But Zhang Fang says, no, no, it's real.
And then Zhang Zi talks in his sleep.
Yeah, suddenly yells out, good traitors! And then goes right back to snoring loudly.
Wow. Okay. What does Lai Gang make of all this? The snoring, the outburst.
He doesn't push it right then. He decides to just head back and report to the emperor. But he's clearly thinking.
So how does he interpret this, this very unusual illness?
This is where Lai Gang shows his insight. He goes back to the court, tells Emperor Huizong, yes, Zhang Zi is ill. But then he redefines the illness.
Oh, so?
He says Zhang Zi's Sheng Chong comes from being startled, from being dismissed, but most importantly, from being filled with, and this is the key phrase, Fenhen Qing Shang, indignation filling his chest.
So it's emotional. It's about injustice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Lai Gang states it plainly. Normal medicine isn't going to cure this.
So Lai Gang uses this diagnosis to fix the bigger problem.
Brilliantly. Really. He tells the emperor, I heard him curse traitors in his dream. This is a heart sickness, and it needs heart medicine.
Heart medicine. I like that. What is the heart medicine, according to Lai Gang?
It's political action. He says, Your Majesty, if you just issue a decree to arrest the treacherous officials who wronged him, Zhang Zi's illness will vanish. No medicine needed.
Whoa. That's incredibly bold, calling out corruption right to the emperor's face like that.
It's a huge gamble. But it works. The emperor asks, okay, who are these traitors?
And does Lai Gang name names?
Well, before Lai Gang can even answer, Zhan Bangcheng, remember him, the official the emperor yelled at earlier, he jumps in.
Oh, what does he do?
He immediately names Wang Duo, the minister of war, as the traitor.
Why Wang Duo? Is he the main culprit?
Not necessarily. The narrator gives us this great little insight. Zhang Bangcheng is being cunning. He's afraid Lai Gang might name three people, possibly including himself.
Ah, self-preservation again.
Totally. Wow. By naming just Wang Duo first, Zhang Bangcheng thinks he can control the situation, maybe find a way to save Wang Duo later, and protect himself in the process.
That really shows the kind of political games being played, even in a crisis.
Absolutely. It highlights how some officials are prioritizing their own skin over the empire's immediate danger. Lai Gang sees right through it, notes Zhang Bangcheng's cleverness, but decides to just roll with it for now.
He takes the win, basically.
Yeah, maybe he hopes Zhang Bangcheng will actually have a change of heart, or maybe he just sees it as the necessary first step. So he leaves to go see Zhang Zi again, this time presumably with the heart medicine, the emperor's decree in hand. Right after the arrest of Wang Duo,
Zhang Zi, who you have to remember is this revered, loyal general in the Song Dynasty.
Right. And Lai Gang tells him that Zhang Bangcheng, that sort of slippery official, was the one who engineered Wang Duo's arrest.
And Zhang Zi's reaction immediately tells you something's wrong. He says, basically, it was far too easy on that scoundrel.
Too easy.
Exactly. It's not just, you know, simple anger. It feels like he sees right through it.
Like he knows justice wasn't really served.
Precisely. He gets that in this court, justice is often just a political tool, something manipulated by people like Zhang Bengcheng.
So the corruption runs deep.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why any punishment feels too easy. It makes you wonder, what does justice even mean in that kind of environment?
So after that, Zhang Ze and Li Gang head to court. Zhang Ze actually gets his old job back.
Yes, he's reinstated, tasked with leading troops against the rebels. Hmm. Seems like good news, right?
But then comes the twist. Zhang Bengcheng, the same guy, steps up.
Oh.
And he suggests, very cunningly, that Zhang Ze should only get 5,000 troops. 5,000 to fight Wang Shan's huge ragtag army.
Which is just setting him up to fail, clearly.
And the emperor, he just approves it.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. And Zhang Ze obviously wants to argue, to say, hey, wait a minute.
But he can't. The text says the emperor had already withdrawn the curtain, dismissed court, and returned to the palace.
Gone. And that detail, the emperor just vanishing like that, it's so important.
Why is that?
Because it completely isolates Zhang Ze. He has no platform, no chance to argue for what he needs.
It shows how vulnerable even a top general is.
Exactly. Vulnerable to political games happening right there in the court. His hands are tied before he even starts.
Wow. So after court, Zhang Ze is understandably despairing. He talks to Li Gang.
Yeah, and he uses this phrase, didn't catch the tiger, but got hurt by the tiger.
Meaning he tried to deal with the political maneuvering, but it backfired on him.
That's how it feels. He feels completely trapped. He knows he's been handed an impossible mission. It's a setup.
So what does Li Gang say? Can he help?
Well, this part really shows how little power they actually have inside the system. Li Gang basically says, look, you head out first, and I'll go back tomorrow. We'll try to plead with the emperor, get you more reinforcements.
So, a promise. A glimmer of hope, maybe.
A tiny glimmer, yeah. But the immediate reality for Zhang Ze is just bleak. He's cornered. He has to figure out what to do with these impossible odds, knowing he's been targeted.
So the next day comes. Zhang Ze takes his tiny army, just 5,000 men.
And his own son, Zhang Feng, is with him.
Right. They go to this place, Mutuo Hill. And what do they see?
Wang Shan's rebel army. And the estimates are staggering. 40 to 50,000 soldiers.
40 to 50,000. Against 5,000.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable.
A 10 to 1 disadvantage, roughly. It's basically a suicide mission.
So Zhang Ze orders his men to camp on the hill. But his son, Zhang Feng, he questions this, right? He's worried.
Yeah, smartly so. He says, aren't we going to get surrounded immediately? There are just too many of them.
And this is where Zhang Ze just breaks down emotionally. The text says he sheds tears as he explains his plan.
It's a powerful moment. He tells his son, look, I understand strategy. I know about heaven's timing and earth's advantages. But, he says, I've been maliciously harmed by corrupt officials. He knows he was set up.
And he's brutally honest about their chances.
Completely. He says flat out, 5,000 men cannot defeat 50,000 rebels. It's impossible.
So what is his plan?
It's incredibly sacrificial. He tells Zhang Feng, I am going into Wang Shan's camp alone.
Alone.
Alone. He says, if I somehow win, bring the troops down. But if I die,
oh man,
you take your mother, take the family, and go home. Get out of the capital. Don't stay here.
He's sacrificing himself to give his family a chance to escape.
Exactly. The weight on him in that moment, it's immense. Those tears, they really show you his desperation.
It's not just about military duty anymore.
No, it's personal. It's protecting his son, his family. It's this profound act of leadership, but it's born from the absolute worst circumstances. It's where duty, honor, family, it all collides.
So he gets ready. He prepares to actually charge in alone.
And his officers, his loyal men, they see what he's about to do. They try to stop him.
They offer to go with him.
Yeah, bravely. They say, let us come too. But Zhang Ze refuses.
Why? Doesn't he need the help?
He tells them, even with you, it's pointless. We can't win this way. He says he'd rather sacrifice himself alone than have them all die with him.
Wow. He's trying to save their lives.
It's an incredible act of, calculated self-sacrifice. He knows their charging together is certain death for everyone. His solo charge. Maybe, just maybe, it buys time or achieves something else.
And then he just goes.
He charges straight into the rebel camp, and he's shouting this incredible challenge.
What does he shout?
Rebel soldiers, those who stand in my way die. Those who avoid me live. See Zhang commander come to raid the camp. Just imagine the scene. Yeah. Pure, desperate courage. It's not arrogance, him refusing help. It's about preserving his men. It raises that question, when is a solo act actually more impactful?
And the author gives this amazing description of him as he charges in.
Oh, yeah, it's very vivid. Paints a picture.
He's got an iron helmet, black armor, a dark robe, riding a black horse, wielding an iron spear.
The iron helmet, black oil armor, dark silk robe, black steed, iron pole spear. Classic warrior imagery.
And his face described as like the bottom of a pot, kind of dark weathered.
Yeah, stern, battle-hardened maybe, and then a full white beard, like a god descended. It makes him seem almost mythical.
Larger than life.
Exactly, which reinforces his reputation, right? He's a famous Song Dynasty general.
And he hits them hard. The text says, when he met a man, the man fell. When he met a horse, the horse was injured.
Just devastating force. It explains how one guy, even one legendary guy, could cause so much chaos in such a huge camp. It's the power of that reputation combined with sheer desperation.
So news of this lone general wreaking havoc reaches Wang Shan, the rebel leader.
Right. And Wang Shan's reaction is, well, it's really interesting. It's not what you might expect.
He doesn't just order his men to kill him?
No. He actually pauses and thinks. He says essentially, Zhang Zi, famous general, loyal minister.
He knows his reputation.
Definitely. And he figures, this solo attack, he must have been screwed over by corrupt officials back in court. He has no other choice, so he's fighting to the death.
That's remarkably insightful.
It is. Wang Shan sees the political situation behind the desperate charge, and then he thinks, wow, if I could get him on my side.
He wants to recruit Zhang Zi.
Exactly. He thinks, with Zhang Zi, conquering the empire would be easy. So what does he order his men?
What?
Capture him alive. Don't harm him.
No way. Capture the charging general alive.
Yeah. It's brilliant in a ruthless, strategic way. Wang Shan isn't just seeing an enemy. He's seeing Zhang Zi's character, the court politics, everything.
He sees an opportunity.
A huge one. Turn this legendary, disgruntled general into his own asset. It really makes you think, doesn't it? How sometimes your enemies see your strengths and your weaknesses maybe even clearer than your allies do?
Because they have to analyze you strategically.
Precisely, for their own gain.
Okay, so Zhang Zi charges in. Wang Shan wants him captured alive. How does this chapter end? Feels like a cliffhanger.
It really is. Zhang Zi, despite his incredible charge, inevitably gets surrounded.
Makes sense, against those numbers.
And the rebels are shouting at him, Zhang Zi, if you don't dismount now, when will you? Basically, surrender.
And sit.
That's where the action stops. But the chapter ends with this incredibly poignant quote. It just sums everything up.
Yes, the quote.
A disheartened hero is bullied, a blunted sword and tired horse. A triumphant fox is stronger than a tiger. A defeated parrot is worse than a chicken.
Wow. Break that down.
Well, Zhang Zi is the disheartened hero. He's being bullied not really by the enemy soldiers, but by the situation created by his own side.
His sword is blunted, his horse tired.
Metaphorically, right. His effectiveness has been sabotaged by the political maneuvering, by the lack of resources. He's been weakened before the fight really begins.
And the triumphant fox. That's Zhang Bangchang.
Seems like it. The cunning official who's stronger than the tiger, the valiant general Zhang Zi, not through actual strength, but through scheming.
And the defeated parrot worse than a chicken. That's Zhang Zi again, stripped of his power and influence.
Yeah, it captures that tragic irony perfectly. This legendary general, reduced and trapped, not by battlefield failure, but by betrayal from within. Prowess isn't enough when the system itself works against you.